Today we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph on the second line. Gemara says, Lema Mistayele. Let us say that this braita is supportive of the view of Ula in the name of Reish Lakish. That's what started us in the sugya, which was the statement of Amar Ula Amar Reish Lakish. Tamei Sheikh Nisya Dolifnim Loke. A Tamei that puts his hands or any part of his body into the Azara, he gets Malkot, indicating that Bia B'miksat Shmei Bia, and even a partial entry or putting any part of your body in, it's considered as if you put your full body in, based on the pasuk of Bechol Kodesh Lotiga Velamikdash Lotavo, just like Nigiyah is Nigiyah B'miktzat, so too Biyah to the Mikdash would also be a Biyah B'miktzat, and result in Malkot. So here we have a Baraita that seemingly supports that view that Biyah B'miktzat Shmei Biyah. As it says, Kol HaSmichot Shayusham, when it comes to any smicha that is done within the Mikdash, we have a general requirement that takef the smicha shchita, that immediately after the smicha is done, you must do shchita. And again, it's one of the three kifot that are required, three things that require that you do them immediately. And one of them is this, takef the smicha shchita. As soon as you finish the smicha, you have to do shchita. Chutz mizo, there's an exception to this rule where it can't be accomplished. Shaita b'shar nikanor. Because it was done in shar nikanor. Sh'ein mitzora yochol nikanesh l'sham. Because the mitzora can't enter into the azara. Ad sh'mezin alav midam chatato u'midam ashamo. Until he gets the dam from the chatat and the asham and the logal shaman. Those are all part of the tarat ha-mitzora, which will then allow him to enter into the azara. So you have a problem, which is that you have a mitzora who is tamei, and the mitzora who's tamei can't enter into the azara. Yet this mitzora needs to do smicha on his korban hasham, and he can't do the smicha on the korban hasham because he is tamei. He's in this bind by which he can't enter into the azara. Yet we need him to enter into the azara in order to do smicha. Shar nikanor, which is the eastern entrance to the azara, shar nikanor was not nitkadesh, as opposed to other door frames or doorways where they were nitkadesh. Shar nikanor was not nitkadesh in order to facilitate the ability of the mitzora to come up right against the azara, so that when we do the processing of the mitzora to have the dam hasham and the log hashamen placed on his bohanot, his thumb, his big toe, and his ear, we can do that without him having to actually enter into the azara. The dam hasham and the log hashamen can't leave the azara. On the other hand, the mitzora can't enter into the azara. So we have him come on the threshold of the azara. They were not mitkadesh, the door frame of the shar nikanor, so he can go all the way up to the threshold of the azara. Now the truth is that it's actually interesting that they were not mikadesh, the entranceway or the area of Shar Nikanor, in order that he could get up to the threshold of the Azara. Why don't they just be mikadesh, the door frame of Shar Nikanor, and then the Azara would extend all the way out to the threshold by Ezrat Nashim, and the Mitzora could stand over there. Why is it that we need it to be that he is standing on the threshold of the Azara past the Shar Nikanor? So there are two ways to deal with that. One is a halachic issue, which is the fact that even though inside the doorways is classified as the Azara, it still lacks other features, like, for instance, maybe Lifnei Hashem and Tzafon. So even though the Mitzora then could get up to the threshold of the quote-unquote Azara at the entranceway to the door of Shar Nikanor, he still would not be Lifnei Hashem, or he still would not be classified as being in the Tzafon. On the other hand, if he can go through Shar Nikanor and then be on the threshold by the Azara, that would qualify as Lifnei Hashem or Tzafon. That's the halachic way to deal with it, which is brought by the Rivan. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that it was a practical consideration. If you are Mekadesh Shar Nikanor, then the Mitzora would have to stand in the sun and in the elements waiting for all of this to be processed because he can't enter into the doorway. On the other hand, if you are not Mekadesh, the door frame area, and allow him to go all the way to the threshold of the Azara, it means while he's waiting to be processed, he stands in the shade of that area, he's able to be protected from the elements. And so it's just a practical consideration on behalf of the Mitzora that he'd be in a better or more comfortable position than the Mekadesh only starting after the threshold of the Shar Nikanor and not the area of the Shar Nikanor itself. And then as we saw yesterday, he had a special dispensation to place his thumb, his toe, and his ear into the Azara. So that dispensation dealt with processing of the mitzorah. Now our question is, how does the mitzorah deal with smicha? He has to do smicha on the korban. Once again, the korban has to be lifnei Hashem, has to be inside the azarah, and he's got to do smicha on it. That means that he's got to enter into the azarah in order to do smicha. The Brayta is telling us that you also have a requirement of teivkef le smicha shchita. Immediately after you do the smicha, you have to do the shchita. Ziyamart bia b'miksat lo shma bia. If it is that an entry or partial entry into the azarah is not called entry into the azarah, leil yadei v'lismoch. Let him stick his hands in and do smicha. So from the Brayta, which says that Hashem Mitzorah is an exception to the rule, where you can't do take up the smicha shchita, that shows you that there's an inability of the Mitzorah to do smicha in this instance. If he was able to do smicha, then you could easily have done it. Remember that Shar Nikanor is centered on the Azarah. It means half of it's in the north, half of it's in the south. The Hashem Mitzorah has to be shechted, it's Kodshei Kodashim, in the north. So you'll bring it up to the doorway of the Azarah. The Mitzorah will put his hands into the Azarah, do smicha on the animal, and then you'll shecht it immediately there on the northern side of the doorway, and you'll have tekef l'smicha shchita. That shows you that that's not a possibility. Doing this will not work because bia b'miksat shmei bia, and therefore he can't put his hands into the azarah because he is tameh. And until he's processed and tahor, he won't be able to put his hands in. If bia b'miksat shmei bia, he'll be in violation of entering into the azarah, the lav that was mentioned by Kula Amarish Lakish, and that's why he can't perform tekef l'smicha shchita. Amar Rav Yosef, Hamani Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. That brayta is authored by Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, who presents a different issue, Damar Mechak Tzafon, because he says that the Tzafon is much further away. The underlying assumption here is that if you were working within the confines of Shar Nikanor, half the doorway's in the north, half the doorway's in the south, it's centered in the Mikdash, and therefore you could do the Shechita right over the threshold of Shar Nikanor in the Azarah, in the northern side of the Azarah. But that is really dependent on the Machloket that we saw earlier in the Masechta as to what is classified as the northern side of the Mizbeach. It says, Al Yerach HaMizbeach Tzafona. We had three opinions as to what that meant. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it was opposite the Mizbeach, meaning that on the northern face of the Mizbeach, till the wall of the Azarah, that's called north. We had the Shita of Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon, who said that even Ben Olam Mizbeach was included. Then we had the Shita of Rabbi, who said that even all the way up to the entrance of the Azarah, to the side of the Ezrat Kohanim and Ezrat Israel, was also considered to be north. So our assumption in the Brayta was that north was considered right over the threshold of the Shar Nikanor. And therefore you could do tekev l'smicha shchita. But if you subscribe to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's position that north is only opposite the Mizbeach, then you have a distance. There's a gap between the Shar Nikanor and the Mizbeach, the 22 amot. And so you could never have tekev l'smicha shchita, because even if he was able to put his hands over the threshold, you still got to get the animal all the way over to the Mizbeach. You have to get it 22 amot before you can shecht it. So even if you say, bia, v'miksat lo shmei bia, that doesn't solve your problem, because you can't have tekev l'smicha shchita, because tzafon is just too far away for the mitzora to do smicha, and then immediately do a shchita. Very good. What you see from here is that tekef, at minimum, must be less than 22 amot. Because otherwise, you could accomplish tekef even with a span of 22 amot. And therefore, it's brought down halachically by the Rama in dealing in other areas of halacha where it says tekef. He says you have at maximum the amount of time that can elapse when you have a requirement of tekef is 22 amot. The source for that is here. Because you see the Gemara says that once you cross the threshold of 22 amot, that's not called tekef anymore. It doesn't tell you what the shear is, but it tells you that if you reach 22 amot, you're clearly not at tekef anymore. Now, when I ask a simple question, Belaved Pishpish, why don't you make a little doorway on the northern side? Who says that you have to do it from the eastern side? Come from the northern side, cut out a little doorway opposite the Mizbeah, and then the Mitzorah can do his smicha on the northern side. If you believe Bia B'miksat Lo Shmei Bia, then you have a solution by just creating an opening on the northern side, and he can do his smicha over there. So, Abaye v'Rava, Damrei Tarvayu, They quote the pasuk that's found in Divrei Yomim with regards to David's plan to build the Beit HaMikdash, and then Hashem telling him that it won't be him, but his son Shlomo. There, David declares that he has all the information, all the blueprints, everything from Hashem. And then there's a pasuk that says, "Akol bichtav miyad Hashem, alai hiskil et kol malachot hatavnit." That everything was in writing from Hashem, that He gave me the wisdom or the understanding, et kol malachot hatavnit, exactly what the blueprints of the Mikdash are. And based on that, we have a principle that you're not allowed to change anything with regards to the Mikdash. The Mikdash has blueprints. Those blueprints came from Hashem, Miyad Hashem, and for that reason, you don't have a right to change them. So you want to open up a little doorway on the north, that's not an option, because you don't have a right to change anything with regards to the Binyan. The Baal Yetosafot over here say, why is it that you're allowed to add on to the city, add on to the Azarot? That's only when they find a posuk that gives them reason or basis for doing that, kihahid de sukkah, like that which is in sukkah. This will become important, I'll explain in a second. Says mi ukasho, he says, if that is true, what I'm saying, that if you find a pasuk, or you find a reason based on the psukim to do something or change something with regards to the building or the blueprints of the mikdash, then you're permitted to do that, then also here, ta'achanami and the chakrak le domizeh. There's no bigger pasuk here that you need the mitzora to do smicha. And if you need to do smicha, why isn't that sufficient reason to tell you that you can override Hakol Bichtav Yad Hashem, that you can override the blueprints and put in a doorway? Why don't you do that? Rachman Amar V'samach. The Torah says, do smicha. Later on, the Gemara is going to go through different permutations and the possibilities that either smicha is not the oraita, or that take of the smicha, shchita, is not the oraita. Once you do that, then you don't have the compelling reason that would allow you to override the blueprints of the Mikdash, because it's not a Torah principle. What's important about this Baal HaTosafot, it says, is that the only right you have to override the blueprints is if you have something de'oraita, you have a Torah requirement, or something from the Psukim that demands that you do this. Rav Moshe Feinstein, one of his many tshuvot about Mechitza in Or HaChaim Aleph, Siman Lamedtet, says, from this you see, really bases it on the Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Nun Aleph, which Tosafot is quoting over here, that Mechitza is the Oraita. The fact that men and women have to be separate, that already we learned from the Psukim, that's something that is almost obvious that they have to be separated in these situations. But even when they are separate, how do you know that you need a Mechitza in between them for davening, for other things that we do? Gemara over there quotes the Psukim with regards to the Hesped of Mashiach, that the men and women are kept separate. Now, the Gemara is trying to explain what they were doing in the Mikdash on Motzei Yom Tov, that's Motzei Yom Tov Arishon, Motzei Yom Tov Acharon, Machloket in Girsa, which obviously has implications. But there they're speaking about Simchat Beit HaShoeva, or possibly if it's Motzei Yom Tov Acharon, they're speaking about Hakel, that they had to do a Tikkun Gadol. They did a big fixing inside of the Ezrat Nashim in order to set up a structure that would allow the separation of the men and the women. Well, the Gemara there says, how can you do that? You have the pasuk Kol Bichtav Yad Hashem. You have the blueprints in the Mikdash. You're not allowed to change the Binyan at all. So the Gemara there quotes the pasuk that says that there is a requirement that men and women be separated. What Rav Moshe says from that is, you're only allowed to do that. You're only allowed to override a Kol Bichtav Yad Hashem if you have a Doraita principle that is governing and telling you you can expand. That's what the Baal HaTosafot just said here. If you have a compelling reason, min haTorah, then you can override the blueprints. The fact that they were doing a tikkun and they were fixing the Mikdash, changing the structure in order to facilitate the ability to separate the men and women, shows you mechitza de'oraita. That's Rav Moshe's conclusion based on the Gemara and Sukkah and what Tosafot is quoting over here. The fact that you're overriding a Kol Bichtav Yad Hashem in order to have a mechitza, or to have a separation, shows you by definition that Mechitza is Doraita. That's Moshe's Chiddush over there. Not everybody agrees. Many believe that Mechitza is the Rabbanan. But Moshe believes that not only is the separation of men and women Doraita, but putting a Mechitza there and not sufficing with the separation of men and women is also Doraita based on this Pasuk of Akol Bichtav Miyad Hashem. Iged Amrei, some say, Amar Rav Yosef, Kol HaSomeich, Rosho v'rubo machnis. When it comes to smicha, it's not just putting your hands on the animal. You have to have your head and your whole body or the majority of your body in there, my daima, why is that the case? You have to do smicha with all of your power, all of your strength. You really need to lean yourself into the animal, and you can't do that just with your hands. You need to bring your body over the animal in order to weigh on the animal. Hilkach, lo efshar. So therefore, it's impossible. Even if you believe bia b'miksat, lo shmei bia, nevertheless, you can't accomplish smicha, because smicha would require more than bia b'miksat. It would require a full bia into the mikdash, into the azara, and nobody would permit that. Even here, we're only allowing for bia b'miksat, and here you can't use bia b'miksat. So we have here the statement of Ulam Reish Lakish, that bia b'miksat shmei bia. You get malkot for that, and we would have thought it would preclude you from doing some things, including smicha on the Hashem Mitzorah. And we have a braita that seems to back that up, saying that Hashem Mitzorah is the exception to the rule, where you can't have teichav the smicha shkita. And seemingly it's for the reason of Ulam Reish Lakish, which is that you can't do bia b'miksat, you can't just put your hands in. So that would be a good evidence or proof to the position of Ulam Reish Lakish. The Gemara rejected it for one of two reasons as a proof. Either because this is following the opinion of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, where the tzafon is too far away for him to do a smicha that would then immediately be done with shkita, or because of Rabbi Yossi's suggestion that smicha requires more than bia b'miksat, requires full bia. And for that reason, even if you believe bia b'miksat lo shmei bia, nevertheless, you would still say in the braita, you don't have taken from the smicha shkita, because either it's too far away, the tzafon, or because it requires the entire of your body in order to do smicha. Where it says, Micah Savar, wait a minute, let's take a step back here and understand what's going on here. Ika Savar, smicha Hashem Mitzorah Doraita. If you believe that when you do a smicha on an Hashem Mitzorah, that's a din Doraita, but take after smicha Shkita Doraita. In addition, the need for immediacy of Shkita after you do the smicha, that's also a Doraita principle. Leo velismach lehedja. Let him go in explicitly, meaning that let him go in without any restrictions, without any inhibition. The Rachman Amar. The Torah tells you, you gotta do it. The Torah tells you, do smicha. And the Torah says, also smicha has to be done immediately before shkita. The only way to accomplish that is for you to enter into the Azara. And Okanami, the Torah tells you to do it. That means that the restrictions are waived in that situation. The Torah only prescribe it if it was possible to do. And so it must be that you have a right to do this. And why are we speaking about the fact that, well, it's bia b'miksat, lo bia b'miksat, you can't go in, you can't go in. You should just be able to go in. It's a principle, d'oraita, that allows you to do this. And as the Baal Tosafot will point out, kevan d'lo efshar b'inyan acher. There's no other way to do it without you entering bituma, v'lo mikaymin smicha b'tara. And there's no way to accomplish smicha b'tara. V'lo dami l'shar t'meim. As opposed to other korbanot. By other tzmeim, we say they send their korbanot in order to be processed, because they can't be present, they can't enter into the Azara. We don't say, oh, why don't they go in? They also have to do smicha. Why don't we allow them to enter into the mikdash and do their smicha? Because there are manifestations of their smicha b'tahara. What Balei HaTosafot are pointing out is that Hashem Mitzorah is only brought by a Mitzorah. And if Hashem Mitzorah is only brought by a Mitzorah, and it requires smicha, the only way to have smicha accomplished is for a Mitzorah to do the smicha. And that means by definition a Tamei must do the smicha in order to accomplish the Din De'oraita. On the other hand, by other Tmeim that send in their Korban, when they are Mechuseri Kapara, whether it's a Chatat, whether it's an Olah, whether it's a Shlamim, those items have manifestations where they're brought by Tehorim, where the smicha is done. Or the demand for smicha that's found in the Torah can be accomplished, maybe not in this particular situation, but in other situations it will be possible to accomplish it. And so therefore you can't say the Torah principle will cause you to override the din of Tumah entering into the Azara. Because Samach will be accomplished by someone who is Tahor. Oh, you happen to be Tameh? You don't have a right to enter. So your smicha will be suspended. But that doesn't mean the pasuk's never accomplished. The pasuk is accomplished when people are Tehorim. By Hashem Mitzorah, the only way to accomplish the pasuk is to have a Mitzorah enter into the Azara. And that would indicate the necessity to override, because Dolo Efshar, there's no other way, there's no other way to do this without entering in bitumah. So Gemara answers, Amar Avada Bar Matno, Gezeira Shemi Yirveh B'Psiot, Eino Chanami. The truth is, you could have entered in. Being Tameh as a Mitzorah will not prevent you from doing Smicha in the Azara. The problem is, it's way too risky. Because of the Chiyum Karet that is associated with the Tameh being inside of the Azara. You take one misstep, you're Chayav Karet. The only thing you're allowed to do is a dispensation here to do the Smicha and then come right back out. If you walk a little bit in a circuitous route, you take one step past the area that you need to do the smicha, chayav karet, because the dispensation is only to allow you to do exactly what you need, nothing more than that. So since the waiver is so narrow in scope, there's a high risk that you could violate that waiver. And the Chachamim said, better not to do smicha than to violate an isur karet of being in the azara bituma. So enochanam midoraita, you could have entered in, the Mitzorah could have entered the Azara and done his smicha and accomplished Tekov smicha shkita. The Braita says that we don't do it, not because of Bia B'miksat Shma Bia, but rather because of Gzerat Chachamim of Shema Yirveh B'Psiot. We're worried about him doing too much in the Azara, spending too much time there, whatever the extra unnecessary time would be, and that would be a violation in a Chiyuv Karet. So here, the Chachamim, through a Sheva Altase, are suspending a Din D'Oraita, which we know the Chachamim are empowered to suspend an accomplishment, a Mitzvah Aseh D'Oraita, the Sheva Altase, through passive disengagement from the Mitzvah. We do this all the time when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat. We desist from blowing the Shofar through a Sheva Altase. Lulav, when the first day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbat, again, we desist from engaging in a mitzvah aseh through a sheva altase. Same thing here. They will disengage from smicha based on the Chachamim's statement, just be a sheva altase, don't engage in this matter. Iged Amre, another solution to the problem is, Amar Avada Mamatna, smichat Hashem Mitzora deoraita. In Ochanami, the requirement for smicha on the Hashem Mitzora is a din min haTorah, takef the smicha shkita, lav deoraita. On the other hand, the requirement that the actions be juxtaposed immediately after the smicha shkita be done, that's not a din d'oraita, that's only a din d'rabbonon. So now, when you speak about a din d'rabbonon, you're not going to suspend the restriction against someone tamei entering into the azara and being chayav karet, you're not going to suspend that for a din d'rabbonon of take of the smicha shkita. Meitave is really take of the smicha shkita and only a din d'rabbonon. What about the bright that we brought yesterday? B'samach? V'shachat. Ma smicha b'torim, af shkita b'torim. Just like smicha must be done b'torim, so too the shkita has to be done b'torim. This is Rashi's view of how we got there yesterday, and he repeats it over here. The puzzle that we're using is, v'shachat efen ha'bakad lifnei Hashem, v'samach. You have to do the shkita lifnei Hashem, and immediately afterwards you have the word v'samach. From that we learn that smicha must also be lifnei Hashem. So the necessity for smicha to be lifnei Hashem and be only done with tahorim is a result of a belief of tekef l'smicha shchita. Without the concept of tekef l'smicha shchita, you would never come to the conclusion that smicha has to be done b'tahorim. That is because the structure of the posuk is v'shachat et ben habakar lifnei Hashem v'samach. We learned from that the smicha must be immediately juxtaposed to the shkita. Then we also learned that it has to be lifnei Hashem. The only way to accomplish smicha lifnei Hashem and do shkita immediately afterwards is for the smicha to be done by tehorim. Because otherwise, if you didn't have a demand for take of the smicha shkita, then you could do it with the tamei. You bring the animal out to the tamei, he does the smicha, then you bring the animal back in and do the shkita. If that was the case, then you wouldn't have any proof that you need tehorim with regards to smicha. Because then you wouldn't have a demand for lifnei Hashem, and then you wouldn't have a demand for tehorim. The fact that the Braita says that smicha requires tehorim is a proof that you must believe take up the smicha shkita. Because the whole source in the pasuk is from the fact that shkachat oto lifnei Hashem v'samach. That juxtaposition of samach to the shkita, telling you that it must be done immediately together, tells you it also must be done lifnei Hashem. The only way to accomplish smicha lifnei Hashem, meaning in the azara, is with the tahor. A tamei can't be there. But if you don't believe tekev the smicha shvita, then you could take the animal outside, do the smicha, bring it inside, and then do b'shakat oto lifnei Hashem, and do the shkita lifnei Hashem. You could separate the two items, and smicha would never make a demand for tehorim. The fact that the Brayta says smicha is a given that you need tehorim shows you it premised on the fact that tekev the smicha shkita. V'yamart labdi oraito. If you tell me that tekev the smicha shkita is not a Torah principle, b'tzmeim nami mishkachava. You could do the whole thing with tzmeim because then you don't have this whole limud that smicha is lifnei Hashem. You have shkita lifnei Hashem, but you don't have smicha lifnei Hashem. The only way to get smicha lifnei Hashem is to have it take up a smicha shkita. That's absent, then you could have tzmeim. What's the brayta speaking about? And this is what compelled Rashi before to explain that the source for the fact that smicha is done lifnei Hashem is actually the pasuk of shachat at ben abakad lifnei Hashem v'samach, because of the fact that the Gemara here connects to integrally and says, if it's not for the fact of tekev the smicha shkita, you wouldn't have known lifnei Hashem by smicha. And this is what compelled Rashi, and why the Balei Tosfot in the end favor Rashi's explanation, is because here the Gemara sounds exactly like Rashi. And the Shita Mekubetzer points that out in Ot Bet. But then he says, what about the other opinions that we brought back on yesterday's daf with regards to the source of lifnei Hashem by smicha, that it doesn't necessarily come out of shachat ben habakad lifnei Hashem v'samach, but rather out of other psukim? How are they going to explain this Gemara over here? And he asks, Eich mishkach ala b'tmeim. Says, Vomer ivad, ach maskana achik mandamar bia miksat lo shma bia. The Gemara is still going according to the one who says that bia miksat lo shme bia. Deokach parich, shapir b'tmeim, inami mishkach ala, that you can do it with tmeim. Deim ishum lifnei Hashem, efshar demal yadei v'samich. Because if it was just the issue of lifnei Hashem, then you put your hands in and do the smicha. Ela shma mina, tekev, lismicha shkita deoraitehi. So that must mean that tekev smicha shkita is deoraita. Imkein bina and smicha bitorim. And for that reason you need smicha bitorim because of the problem of merchak tzafon. That the tzafon is too far away. And that won't then be tekev smicha shkita. And so that way here, the Shita Mekubetzer no bet, and similarly the Balei Tosafot back on Lamed Bet Amud Aleph, try to defend those alternate views as to where the source for smicha lifnei Hashem is. If you don't learn it out of the pasuk that Rashi uses, where Rashi is saying that it's integral to the limud to say take up the smicha shkita. Ela ipuch, flip that around and say smicha d'Hashem mitzora lav deoraita. The smicha b'nam Hashem mitzora is not a Torah principle. The take up the smicha shkita deoraita. Even though smicha being done immediately before shkita is deoraita, nevertheless, there's not a Torah requirement of smichat asham mitzora. And that's interesting only because the Gemara earlier on learned that there's a necessity for smicha by an asham, either from the hekesh between all the korbanot, because they're listed in the pasuk in Parshat Tzav. And so from that we learn, once we know smicha or halacha by one of the korbanot, we apply it through that hekesh to the other korbanot. Or it's learned out of the pasuk, Tika chatat ha-asham hu, that the asham is like a chatat, and just like a chatat requires smicha, so too an asham requires smicha. So why would you believe that an asham mitzora doesn't require smicha? Where did you get this view or position? It might be helpful in answering the question here, but where do you get this idea that smicha asham mitzora is only midrabanan? So Rashi claims it is because kasavar sheinu bichlal ashamot, it is not included in the other Hashemot because it only comes to Machshir. This is a distinction we've noted many times now with regards to certain Chataot and Hashemot that are associated with the Yoledet, a Nazir, and a Mitzorah, that those Korbanot, even though they're called a Chatat, even though they're called an Hasham, which usually are brought as sin offerings and guilt offerings, nevertheless, in these cases, they're not classified as Chataot and Hashemot in the classic sense. They are here Makshirim. They are those that permit you to enter into the Mikdash, eat Kodesh, or in essence, they are what are Mitaher you. They facilitate the Tahara of these individuals. The Balei Tosafot brought proof or evidence to that fact that the meaning of the word Chatat actually means more than just Kapara or Atonement, but has a meaning of to be Makshir, to enable one to do something, and that's what the meaning of it is over here. So Rashi claims the nature of this asham is different than other ashamot, and for that reason it's excluded from any other limud that you have, because it would not be subsumed in that hekesh, either in tzav, or the hekesh that comes from comparing the asham to the chatat. And Tosafot shows that this view in Rashi might not be so easy to maintain, because we find other places that the Gemara differentiates between asham mitzora and other ashamot, and this is not one of the items that is listed there as a distinction between an asham mitzora or being unique versus other ashamot, and this should have been one of those in the list. The fact that it's not listed seems to indicate that it's not a differentiated factor, but then you're still left in a bind as to why asham mitzora would be different than any other asham. And once you say that smicha is lab d'oraita, then you can't do smicha at all because of the requirement that smicha be done b'kol kocho. And if you do it b'kol kocho smicha and you opt to do smicha when you don't have to do it, then you're what's called mishtamish b'kodoshim. Since you're leaning and putting all your weight on the animal, then you're actually gaining benefit or being nene from kodoshim. And if you don't have permission to do that and do that smicha, then you'd be precluded from doing smicha on the animal. And that's why by the asham mitzora, there is no smicha, because if the Torah doesn't say that it's deoraita, then you don't have a right to do the smicha. So Tosfot then invokes the Gemara in Chagiga that says that if we do permit you to do smicha in a case where it's not permitted deoraita, we say akfu yadaichu, let your hands float above, meaning don't do it b'chol kochol. So smicha derabanan wouldn't be done b'chol kochol, and therefore would not be a violation of being mishtamesh b'kodoshim. Alright, so now the Gemara jumps tracks. It tried to bring a proof to Ulam Reish Lakish from the Braita that via b'miksat shmeviya. Gemara rejected it for a number of reasons, one of which was possibly the impossibility of accomplishing the smicha, even if you said via b'miksat shmeviya. And then we discussed why there wasn't a full dispensation to enter into the azara and accomplish smicha. Now the Gemara offers an alternative. Ravina Amar, the Inyan Malkot Idmar. So before we had a problem which precipitated all of this, which is that you have the statement of Ulam Reish Lakish, the Bia B'Miksat Shmeviya, and then we brought the Braita by Mitzora on his eighth day that became a Baal Keri on Erev Pesach, that we allow the suspension of the Asay not to enter into the Mikdash because of the Asay de Karet of Pesach, and we allow the Mitzora to become Tahor. And over there, he's a Baal Keri at the same time. And nevertheless, we allow him to put his hands, his feet, and his ear into the Azara in order to become Tahor, despite the fact that he is Tameid, which would preclude him from entry in that situation. So there you see, Bia B'Miksat, Lo Shmei Bia. And that was the question we posed against Ulam Reish Lakish. We had the answer of Abaye, which was Hol Vishtare Ishtare. Since it's permitted for the Mitzora, we also permit it for the Baal Keri. But not that this is a general principle, that Bia B'Miksat, Lo Shmei Bia. It's unique to this situation, as the Baal Tosafot will point out. It's only because he became a Baal Keri on his eighth day. Had he become a Baal Keri on his seventh day, you would not have that dispensation. And so clear from that the dispensation is Hol Vishtare Ishtare, not that Bia B'Miksat, Lo Shmei Bia. So that was the way that we reconciled between Ulam Reish Lakish and the Braita. Here, Ravina Amar is offering an alternative way to reconcile this din of Reish Lakish with the Braita. And that is to say, Linyan Malkot Itmar. When we said that Ulam Reish Lakish says that you get Malkot for entering to the Azarab Bia B'Miksat Shmei Bia, that is all that the Hekesh is there for. It does not include a Chiyub Karet. That, in that way, you can solve the problem. Because the Braita says that the Assay of Karet, of Pesach, overrides the Assay of Tumah. So the Gemara Gaze, if you believe Bia B'Miksat Shmei Bia, that's also an Assay that involves Karet, which is entering into the Azara B'Tumah. Then you have an Assay of Karet against an Assay of Karet. Why would the Pesach trump in that case? Braita says you're dealing with an Assay of Karet versus a regular Assay. According to you, Ulam Reish Lakish, that assay is an assay of karet of entering into the azara, because bia b'miksat shmei bia. So that's why we had a question. What Ravina says is it's not a question. He doesn't believe there's karet. Bia b'miksat results in a lav, malkot, does not result in a punishment of karet. And that way you can still say the assay of Pesach, which includes karet, will override the assay of entering into the azara. Now, if you enter fully into the azara, that would be a chiyuv karet. But if you're bia b'miksat, you have a lav and not karet. The truth is that it's actually maybe even meduyak from the limud of Amar Ulam Reish Lakish, which is the reasoning behind their position is b'chol kodesh lo tiga v'la mikdash lo tavo, that you may not touch anything that is kodesh and you may not enter into the mikdash. And from there we learn negiyah b'miksat, just like negiyah b'miksat, so too biyah b'miksat. But the truth is that negiyah b'miksat is only a lav; it's not karet. So if you say dayo avo min adin liot kinidon, subject of the limud can't be more chamur than the source for the limud. As Rashi notes over here, the chayid kash biya the negiya lazharai kish kinyachtav lo tavo. Aval the onesh lo itkash, for the azharai it is nitkash, but not for the onesh that's associated, then onesh be negiya. Negiya doesn't have any onesh, it just has a lav, it just has an azhara. Therefore negiya b'miksat, quote unquote, is only a lav. If you're learning that from that, to be a b'miksat, to be a mitzat will be no different than the negiya b'miksat, which is, it's a lav. But it does not include karet. Based on that, you have only a lav over here, not a chiyuv karet. And that's why the Braita is not a stira to this position of Reish Lakish anymore, because Reish Lakish is speaking about Malkot, he's not speaking about a chiyuv karet. Now, that opens up Pandora's box. Really, it's true throughout the whole sugya here, that the Gemara has been ignoring something that is true. I mentioned it yesterday, the Baalei Tosafot favored Rabbi Yochanan's explanation of the Braita as being not a dissenting opinion, but rather an explanation of the Braita to make the Braita Derabbanan because of this problem. But now they're faced head on with the problem and they can't do that anymore, which is you have more than just an assay over here. You have an assay, which is Veishachu min ha-machaneh, that to be sent out of the machaneh, and you also have now a lav. A lav, the Inyan Malkot, which says that if you enter Bia B'miksat, you're in violation of a lav. You have an assay of Pesach, which says I should override, because the assay of Pesach has a chiyuv karet associated with it. So I say the chiyuv assay of karet overrides an assay. But that's true if it's only an assay of opposing it. Now you have an assay and a lav. We don't ever find assay doche assay and lota assay. And that's what you're suggesting over here, that the assay of Pesach, which is a karet, will override vayishachu min ha-machaneh, and will also override el mikdash lota bo, which is bia miksat shmei miksat. Yeah, it's only a lav. It's not karet, but it's still a lav. How are you overriding? So the Baalei Tosafot over here have a big chiddush, which is ve'yesh lamar. The assay sheyesh bo karet, chamur. When you have an assay that has karet in it, it becomes a super assay. V'dochei lohu. It has the power not only to override a lav, or not only to override an assay by itself, but it can override both of them. It can override both an assay and a lav, which is not normally true. Normally an assay has the ability to override a lav with all the qualifications that allow you to say assay dochelot assay. If you're an assay versus an assay, then if the one assay is more chamur, we would say it overrides the other assay. But if you ever have an assay against or being opposed by an assay and a lot assay, that's not strong enough to override it. What you see here is that the assay of karet is upgraded to the point where it can not only override an assay alone or override a lav alone, it can override both of them together. This might relate to a question as to why it is that an assay alone cannot be docha an assay and a lota assay. So Tosafot has actually two formulations of why it is that an assay is not docha an assay and a lota assay. We know that an assay overrides a lota assay, and a stronger assay might be docha another assay. The question is, then when you have the combination of an assay and a lota assay, why can't an assay be docha then? So there are two possible ways to formulate that. One way to formulate it is to say that the assay tells you that the lav is a stronger lav. The fact that a normal lav can be overridden by assay, that's fine. But when you have an assay combined with the lav, that tells you that you have a very strong lav here, you have a super lav here. And therefore you can't say assay docha lota assay. That's one formulation. The other way to formulate it is to say eno chanami. When you have an assay and a lota assay and an assay, the assay is docha the lota assay. The only problem is you still have an assay left there after your docha the lota assay. It's assay versus an assay. How do you know which assay to follow? So both of those formulations actually can help in this situation. Here you have an assay of karet. And what the Tosafot says is the assay of karet is a super assay. So just like in the first formulation you say, the problem with an assay and a lav is it makes the lav into a super lav. So that's why a normal assay can't override that lav. Here you have a super assay. So the super assay can override the super lav and it would work in this situation. Or If you say that, the reason that Aseh cannot be Docha and Aseh Nalot Aseh is because, yeah, you're Docha the Lav, but you still have the outstanding Aseh. And then you have an Aseh versus an Aseh, you don't know which one to do. Here again, you have a super Aseh, because it's an Aseh with Karet, and that does tell you what to do. When you have an Aseh versus an Aseh, you will be Docha. So it might be that the way that the Baal HaTov Sefer formulate the reason as to why an Aseh is not Docha and Aseh Nalot Aseh, both of those formulations, an Aseh of Karet could help you to explain why it might be different, and why it would override even an Aseh and a Lot Aseh in that case. All right, so now we are going to jump tracks now. You know, this was a second way to answer the problem with regards to the Limud of Rish Lakish. You had Ula's version of it, and then you have Ravina's version of it, and both of them are trying to deal with how that can be reconciled with the Braita, and that's what we dealt with until now. Now the Gemara is going to jump tracks and say, Rish Lakish darshan this from that posuk in Parshat Tazria. Is that really true? And now we're going to get into a machloket, Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, that spans numerous halachot that deal with Kodesh and Truma. We actually saw this more recently in the Gemara and Makot and Daf Yudalit. It also appears in Yevamot, Ayin Hey, it's a little longer ago. But we've seen these machlokot before, and the Gemara is going to start to challenge whether you can really learn this din that Rish Lakish is stating from that pasuk in Tazria, because we find other limudim that derive from that pasuk that Rish Lakish endorses. If that's the case, how does he have this available to make this drasha? And that will lead to a machloket Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. We'll start today and continue extensively into tomorrow's daf about the sources for many halakhot. The Gemara says, "Ki ata Rabbi Amar Rabbi Bahu leinyan tamei shenagah bekodesh itmar." That pasuk that he's quoted is not about entering into the Mikdash or Bia B'Mikzat. That pasuk is speaking about a tamei shenagah bekodesh. Speaking about a tamei who touches or comes into contact with kodesh, that he's chayav malkot. Ditmar tamei shenagah bekodesh. If you have a tamei who touches kodesh, Rish Lakish amar loke. Rish Lakish says you get malkot. Yochanan amar eino loke. Yochanan says no malkot. Rish Lakish amar loke bechol kodesh lo tiga. He uses that pasuk in Tazria bechol kodesh lo tiga to tell you that by kodesh. Lotiga, don't touch the Kodesh. And that it says, if you do touch the Kodesh, you're violating a law, you're going to get Malkot. Yochanan Amar, Einu Loke. That's not true. How will be Truma Ktiv? That pasuk, Bechol Kodesh Lotiga, is not speaking about Kodesh. It's speaking about Truma. How does he know that? Because the pasuk reads the following. Shloshim Yom, Shloshim Yomim Teshev B'nei Tara, Bechol Kodesh Lotiga, Vela Migdash Lotabo, Ad Melot Yimei Tahara. Until she finishes the days of her Tahara, this is for a Zachar in this incident, so it would be 40 days. She has 7 days of Tumah, and then she goes to the Mikveh, and then 33 days later, at the completion, that's when she is now completely Tehora, and on the 41st day, she has to bring her Korbanot. So you have stages along the way here. The woman originally, in the first 7 days, is Tmeah. At the end of the seventh day, she goes to the Mikveh, she becomes what's called a Tvul Yom Aroch. She's gone to the Mikveh, but she does not become Tahor until Ad Melot Yimei Tahara, until she finishes the 40 days. That means the sunset that makes her Tahora is the sunset on the 40th day. So she's at Tvul Yom from the day she goes to the Mikveh after the 7 days of Tumah until the 40th day, she's at Tvul Yom Aruch, and then the sun sets on the 40th day, she becomes Tahora. But she still has Mechuser Kapara, she's going to bring her Korbanot the next day. And what Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out is the pasuk speaking about Truma, the evidence of which is, according to Rashi, from the fact that it says, Ad Melot Yimei Tahara. When does she become Tahor? From whatever that is mentioned in this pasuk, B'chol Kodesh Lo Tiga, when the sun sets. Well, when the sun sets, she can't eat Kodesh, she can't come into contact with Kodesh, she's still Mechusar Kippurim. Only thing that is permitted from sunset is Truma. That's what B'shasha Kohanim Nechasim Lechol B'Trumatan. That's when you say Kriyat Shema, that's after Shkia, that's at nightfall. So what you see is that the pasuk is seemingly evidencing the fact that it's speaking about Truma, because it says that this Truma ends with sunset. The only Truma that ends with sunset has implications with regards to Truma. So Rabbi Yochanan says the pasuk speaking about Truma and not about Kodesh. But that will then actually turn out that you have an oddity now. According to Rabbi Yochanan, when it comes to coming into contact with Kodesh, you will not get Malkot. That'll turn out that Truma has a chumrah above Kodesh. Generally, Kodesh is more chamor than Truma. Here you have it just the opposite. The Truma will get Malkot, Kodesh will not get Malkot. And as Rashi points out, you can't learn it b'kal v'chomer, because ein mazirin min adin. You can't have a lav be extended through a kal v'chomer and then impose the punishment based on that of malkot on the individual. So now it has to be explicit or through a limud of gzer shava or other misora that allows you to do it. So you can't just have a logical argument and punish someone. If that's the case, you'll turn out that truma is more chamor than kodesh. So the Meiri in Makot says, Eino Chanami. It is the case that truma gets malkot and kodesh does not get malkot. But that's because of the fact that it is because of the kula of truma, you have a chumra in its punishment. People are more likely to be mekio by truma because it is a lighter form of kedusha. And that's why the Torah prescribes malkot for touching truma. Other than kodesh, in shape diliminate. People are already separate from it. They don't get engaged with kodesh. And therefore, there's no need to say you get malkot for touching it or the giyah is a problem because people are already forewarned of coming close or coming into contact with kodesh. That's one way to deal with it. The Tosafot in Makot gives an alternate view, which is that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't really believe that you get Makot with regards to Nigiat Truma. All it's telling you is that Nigiat Truma is Pusel, but it does not generate a field Makot. You can see that actually here in the Shita Mekubetzet in Ot Aleph, towards the end of the Ot Aleph, where he says, Vakadosh, Rav Shlomo Midrashyosh, Perish Hayi B'Truma, Lipasel Truma B'Nigiahu Da'ata. There's no way that you're getting malkot by truma. But the psol kodesh lo yitzrich. And to tell us that kodesh is pasul, you don't need a pasuk. I feel la'achar malot nami pasla v'necha kol. Because even after malot you made tara, you still post-sell the kodesh. So you only need to tell us that with regards to truma, until that point in time, she is post-sell the truma. But that means that they don't believe that there's a chiyuv malkot that is associated with Rabbi Yochanan's position with regards to Nigiat Truma. In that way, it's not an oddity that you're getting Malkot for Truma and not for Kodesh, because you're not getting Malkot for either of them. And in that way, there's no distinction between Kodesh and Truma. Right now, the Gemara says, V'Reish Lakish, Haikra L'Hochi Hudata? Is that what Reish Lakish uses the pasuk for? Hamibayle Azara L'Ochel Basar Kodesh? Doesn't he need it for a warning of eating Basar Kodesh? Didmar. Azara lochel basar kodesh minayim. Where is the warning? Where is the azara, the lav, that will give you makot for consuming basar kodesh? Reish Lakish amar, b'chol kodesh lo tiga. We learn now from the pasuk of b'chol kodesh lo tiga. Well, you just told me you're using that to teach you that if you come into contact with kodesh, you get makot. Now you're telling me that if you consume kodesh when you are tamei, that you get makot? B'yokan amar, Tani Bardala Acha Tumato Tumato Bibiat Migdash. We learn how to Gzeir Shava of Tumato and Tumato from entering into the Migdash. Malalan Anash Vizir. Just like by Biat Migdash, if you enter with Tumato Guf, you have both a warning not to do such, and if you do violate that, you're gonna be Chayav Karet for it. Afkan Anash. So too over here by the case of eating Kodesh bit Tumato Guf, there we have explicit pasuk that tells you your chayav karet is here. So too, we'll assume there's an azara that comes along with it. So that is based on, again, we saw this in Makot, that there is a gzeira shava of tumato, tumato. And that is in Parshat Chukat. It says with regards to an individual who is tamei, that he's precluded from entering into the mikdash. Kol nogea b'meit b'nefesh adam asher yamut v'lo yitchata et mishkan Hashem timei. So if you have tumat guf and you enter into the mishkan, you are chayav karet. He may need dalo zorak alav tameye od tumato bo. So you see the word tumato is brought in the context of someone who has tumat guf and enters into the mishkan. And the azara for someone who has tumat guf from entering in the mikdash, we learn out in Parshat Naso where it says mizachar ad nekeva tishaleichu el michutz lamachane tishalchum. So here by Tumat Aguf, you have both the Chiyub Karet that is found in Parshat Chukat. You have a Lav and Azhara that is found in Parshat Naso. And the Hekesh is to the Pasuk that is found in Parshat Tzav, which says, V'nefesh, asher tuchal basar mizevach shlamim asher l'ashem, v'tumato alav, mean that he has Tumat Aguf, v'nechrata nefeshehi me'ameha. So there you have a chiyuv karet that's associated with someone tumat guf that consumes kodesh. What we're missing is an azhara to tell you that someone who has tumat guf and consumes kodesh is subject to an azara. We have the punishment. We don't have the azara, the lav. What Rabbi Yochanan says is the word tumato appears here in Tzav, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Chaf in Vayikra, and so too in Parshat Chukat, in Perek Yutet, Pasuk Yud Gimel, also the word tumato appears there. And the Xereshava is just like the tumato by tumato guf and entering the Mikdash, both as an azara and an onish karet. So too, the anush karet that associated with tumato guf and the consumption of kodesh will also have an azara. And the Xereshava provides that azara for us. So now, the Gemara is asking, how can it be that Reish Lakish believes that touching truma results in malkot when he uses that same pasuk to restrict someone who eats basar kodesh to tell you that there's an azara? So now the Gemara answers, Tameh shenakava kodesh, the restriction of the lav of a Tameh that touches kodesh, mida afka rachmanah melashon negiyah. That's because the Torah expressed it in melashon negiyah, even though it meant ochel. Azara l'ochel, midkash kodesh l'migdash. The fact that it also has application that someone who eats kodesh be tumata guf gets an azara, that's because of the juxtaposition of chol kodesh lo tiga, Bela Mikdash, Lo Tavo. We'll see in a second, the Brayta will tell us what that Hekesh does. So for Reish Lakish now, the whole Kodesh Lo Tiga teaches you, Tameh Shenakava Kodesh gets Malkot. The fact that it expressed it in Lashon Nigiyah is what teaches you that there is a Lav there. In addition, the whole Kodesh Lo Tiga, because of the Hekesh to the Mikdash, also teaches you that a person who consumes Kodesh, Betumat Aguf, gets Malkot. And Tanya Kavati to Reish Lakish, we have a Brayta that supports Reish Lakish's position. Chol kodesh lo tiga, azara lo ochel. That's a law for someone who eats kodesh. Talmer azara lo ochel, oinu elo nogeya. The pasuk says nogeya. How can you say it's speaking about someone's eating kodesh? Talmelomar, b'chol kodesh lo tiga, velo mikdash lo tabo, mekish kodesh le mikdash. This is the hekesh between kodesh and mikdash. Ma mikdash, davar sheyesh bo netilat nishama. Just like by the mikdash, we're speaking about karet, where betumat haguf, he enters into the mikdash, you get karet. Av Kodesh has to be a situation in which Davar Sheyesh Bo Netilat Neshama. It has to be something where you result in a Chiyuv Karet. V'ibin Ogeya Netilat Neshama Mi'ika. Just speaking about touching Kodesh, even though Reish Lakish agrees there's a lav, nobody says there's a Chiyuv Karet for touching Kodesh when you are a Tameh. Ela Ba'achila. Must be that it's speaking about Achilat Kodesh, because there we do find that there's a Chiyuv Karet if you eat Kodesh Bitumat Haguf. All right, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Lamed Daled, Amud Aleph.